America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
A minute and a half past the hour, and lo and behold, here we are at the beginning of yet another broadcast. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if, and this is a big if you want to get into the chat room, and if the chat room will let you in. Not if the moderators or me or anybody else will let you in, but if the chat room will let you in. I just got in there. I had to install Firefox for a browser because neither Chrome nor the new Windows Edge of Hickey browser thingamajig useless would work. And it took a while. But I got into the chat room. You can get into. All you gotta do is pick out a screen name and a password. Well, you'll be right there in the midst of a real-time multimedia extravaganza every evening with the program during its live hours, to wit, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yeah. And I mentioned in there a couple minutes ago the room's being weird again, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie said, "Bob, shh, or they'll charge us extra for the weird." No doubt. It would not surprise me in the least. But the chat room is working, and we know that for an answer. If you upgrade to Windows 10, your best bet for getting there is Firefox. Has something to do with Java. No idea. And also at Head On Radio Network. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, we have a tab called Contribute. And that's how we keep the program on the air. Yes, indeed. Whether it be a dollar, $5, or $5,000, we've never had one of those. You can help us keep things going by going to the Contribute tab at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and filling out the required fields, some of which are not required at all. The one about Aunt Matilda's corset size, you can leave that one blank. And the year that Uncle Bud got his hernia operation, you can leave that one out too. But it'll work for you. It'll take you, the point is to just get to the next screen, and that's where you make all your PayPal choices about Visa, MasterCard, you know, that sort of thing. Somebody asked me why I said no American Express and no Diners Club the other night, because I don't think PayPal takes those. But anyway, that's why. We try to raise $200 every evening, and I'm happy to say that thanks to Dennis and thanks to Chris in Germany, we finished up last night's fundraising, and we start out with a clean slate, just the plain old garden variety, usual $200 to raise this evening. And that is reassuring. 10 at 200, 200 at 10. Somewhere, Carol Baker is kicking furniture because we don't have odd change in there to make my brain sweat doing my ciphering and gazintas. But yeah, $200 will get the trick, do the trick this evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250. Oh, dear God, 32 at 6 and a quarter. Yeah, and I'm not going any further because then we get into a third decimal place. But anyway, that's how we keep things going. If you prefer to operate by the United States Postal Service, you are certainly welcome to do that as well. And you can reach out to the Horn, checks and money orders. We don't recommend sending cash simply because it has been known to disappear before it reached us. We love the U.S. Postal Service, but it's a very large organization, and, well, they're bound to have a few miscreants in them along the way, and we've found along the way a couple of opened envelopes and some cash gone. Yeah. So, checks and money orders made payable to the Horn. To the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Boss Man Wayne will be tickled. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. You're not alone. The chat has been super slow to load over the last few weeks. Yeah. I wonder if these folks are going out of business or something. I hope not. I'd hate to have to find an alternative to this. It's been working reasonably well for a matter of years. We'll find out. And also, you may recall that at the beginning of yesterday's program, I offered up a potential Moran nomination for myself, being as how I will be in charge of posting the podcasts and the archives of the files over at White Rose Society during Ben Birch's upcoming much-deserved vacation. And I'm proud to say that after only a moderate amount of screw-ups, I think I've got it. To anyone who didn't get last night's podcast prompt notification in an RSS feed, that's on me. I done forgetted. The dating protocol, and I don't mean like, you know, flowers or do you open her door, that pull out the chair, that kind of thing. No. Ben, a long time ago when he set up the archive, he used a dating protocol that is code specific, and I left a zero out until this afternoon. We regret the error. Right. So that, but I think I've got it. And you know what else I did? Because I'm into learning and stuff. Over on the White Rose Society page, I actually corrected the phone number, and I corrected the program hours because it still said from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., and I changed it to 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Daylight Eastern Time, right. All right, then. That takes care of all the housekeeping. Oh, one more thing. The equipment fund is down to $1,800 to go. Just a reminder, remember, we are raising and trying to raise enough money to purchase a couple of extremely expensive hardware gizmos that will allow me, on a case-by-case basis and as need be, to do some fill-in work, guest hosting, as it were, for our dear friend Mike Malloy. And we are $1,800 from being finished with that effort. If you want to help out, with that, then by all means you can send a PayPal contribution or a contribution through the U.S. mail, as some have done. Thank you very kindly to, among others, Daniel, who helped out. A lot of the truth seekers have, in fact, helped out with the equipment fund. Sorry, checking out a couple of things. But thank you to everyone who has helped out via the mail. And I will have a list, and thank yous will be going out accordingly. See, that's, and I apologize. I apologize, because one of the things that happens is when things do come in via the mail, I often don't have an email address by which to return thanks. So that means I'm going to do a better job of sending out handwritten thank yous by a return U.S. Postal Service delivery. Okay. It is, of course, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Oh, by the way, because she cannot be trusted. Because she can't be trusted, our fundraising goal this evening, because it is so daggum fun to listen to Bob the English major screw up basic mathematics live in real time on air, our fundraising goal for this evening has been reduced to $192.37. No. Yes. $192.37. $192.37. Courtesy of our good friend Carol. Yes. Let's see. Some notes on browsers before we get into the heart and soul of the Titanic expressions of intellect. Randy has updated to Firefox 4.0 today. Let's see. Kelly in Calgary tells me, if you go to the Windows 10 Start menu under Windows Accessories, you'll find that Internet Explorer resides there and works just fine. Edge may become a very good browser, but for now, it's just not very useful. And I could not agree more, and I'll be going and finding Internet Explorer. I guess they have to make somebody go out there and use it so that they can figure out how buggy it is in the first place. Jack in Shreveport says, I heard that Windows 10 can change or reset some settings or defaults. I have a Mac, but Firefox uses a Java applet plugin, which has to be enabled, and I have to set some preferences for Java to run. Maybe Windows 10 is similar. No, actually, the Edge message through Windows 10 was that Windows 10 simply has refused to deal with Java any longer. At least that was the way I read the message. Oh, okay, no. Silly me, I've never used Firefox before, so I wouldn't have noticed. No, Randy upgraded to Firefox version 40.0 today. Not 4.0. Once again, we regret the error. Yes. It really is. It's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and we may all recall that Titanic Tuesday is named for one of those great moments in right-wing broadcasting. It occurred several years ago when our buddy Jim was listening to radio in the fifth smallest radio market in America, Beckley, West Virginia, and he heard the master of monotone, the morning right-wing guy over there, Steve, take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who asked, Steve, how come it is that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach. To which Steve confidently replied in his stentorian monotone, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. I remember that evening I was talking to Jim about it, and he swore up and down that he wasn't making it up, that that really did in fact happen, and I can believe it. The movement of the Titanic plates. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic brandy snifters. And I want you to know, nobody's ever mentioned it in an email, but little things matter in this life to me. Ever since I've been doing the Titanic Tuesday shtick, I don't think I have ever repeated a piece of Titanic tableware. Sometimes it's a real challenge. I thought about it just because I'm pretty sure I've never used brandy snifters, but maybe I have. But all along the way, one never really, really stops to think about how much goes into setting a truly highfalutin table until one stops to think about how many different little items of bric-a-brac foolishness there are on one. Carol, by the way, sent a message. Start ciphering, Sonny. Well, how's that? I ciphered that pretty damn quick on the fly, didn't I? But anyway, that's where Titanic Tuesday comes from. And I thought, because we hadn't made too much mention of it, I touched on it briefly last night. It seems almost tailor-made, if not for... It wasn't more in Monday material specifically. It's much more Titanic Tuesday or Thorn in the Side Thursday. Probably more Thorn in the Side Thursday, but I don't want to let this thing lay around much longer. Out in Colorado, there was a beautiful river once. It was called the Animas River. And it flowed through some pretty gorgeous, gorgeous landscape. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in that particular portion of Colorado, during the eras, epochs, and eons in which the Earth formed, which incidentally was not over the course of 7 days, some minerals were deposited in the area generally near where the course of the Animas River runs. With that in mind, there was some mine waste. Gosh, that doesn't sound like much, does it? There was just some mine waste laying around. And the Environmental Protection Authority, the agency charged with attending to matters such as these, went to work on the mine waste, which was liquid in form, and had an entire, no offense to prior friends who are practitioners of the Wiccan faith, an entire witch's brew of poisonous, toxic heavy metals contained therein. Mm-hmm. In the course of dealing with this mine waste that had just been kind of laying around, the sort of after effects of massive mining operations that, oddly enough, the mine company had neglected to deal with, because freedom. Well, the EPA workers screwed up, and something on the order of 500 gallons of this poisonous stew began flowing into the Animas River every minute. Yeah. That's a lot of poison. And it has since turned the river orange from the source of the spill all the way down into New Mexico. And, hey, ultimately it'll make its way to the Grand Canyon. And there, the river will just match the canyon now. Oh, thank you, mining industry. All right. Jeremy reminding us that that particular mineral, gold, was also formed in the center of exploding stars. We are such stuff as stars are made of, right? At first, the EPA tried to downplay it. Ah, it's a little spill. But then it turned out that, no, there was no way to put a happy face on this, that it was a massive, disastrous dump. The EPA, with not egg, but more like arsenic all over its face, is rushing around furiously to try to address problems caused by their mistake, because a lot of people rely on wells in the area, and some people actually draw water from the river. As of yesterday, testing had not yet begun in the San Juan County area of New Mexico, but it was badly needed. They had water restrictions in effect all along the river, according to County Executive Officer Kim Carpenter. Their biggest problem, Kim Carpenter said, is making sure residents and livestock have access to drinking water. I would afford Kim Carpenter an award, or at the very least a gentle jingle of the cowbell for restatement of the obvious. Private well sample. The river is closed to everybody throughout San Juan County, New Mexico. People are advised to avoid contact with the river, not let their pets have contact with the river. Livestock should not be allowed to drink the water in the river. And people should not catch the fish in the river, because the fish have been in the river, and it would be a real surprise if there were any fish to catch, because they're probably dead. Or if you pull them out of the river, they're going to be Homer Simpson fish with four heads and one and a half eyes, and maybe a baby's arm growing out of where their dorsal fin ought to be. Enter EPA official McGrath. I'm McGrath, the pollution dog. No, not that. No. Sean McGrath is administrator for EPA Region 8. He said, we're working to see if we can get this on the national priorities list for designation as a Superfund cleanup site. If? Well, it's one option that can be considered.
Oh, it's going to be a Superfund site. Gee, you know what that means? Ha ha! Oh, this is beautiful. It means the taxpayers are on the hook. But that's okay. Back here in almost level West by Coal, Virginia, we're finding out that with the number of bankruptcies increasing in the coal industry, oh, who could have seen this coming? I mean, really? Taxpayers are probably going to be on the hook for cleaning up the mess of mountaintop removal that these companies are going to leave when they sneak off and skulk away in the dark and still of the night with pockets brimming with cash, cackling into the darkness as they slip away from us ignorant hillbillies. No, really. We told them we were bringing them good jobs. Good jobs. Yeah, the best part was when they bought it. and they threatened the lives of the tree huggers, saying that they didn't love West Virginia. Because they didn't love us polluting West Virginia and poisoning everybody. Woo, 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 woo. Yeah, you can get a hillbilly to believe just about anything. I ain't laughing. But of course we're going to be on the hook. Since when in capitalism does business ever bear the actual burden of business? Those costs are passed on to the consumer, right? No telling when this river will be okay, if ever. I mean, this could take years, decades, centuries, who knows? Because the heavy metals, being heavy metals, will eventually sort of precipitate out. But they're going to precipitate out into the bottom of the river. Now, are we going to dredge us taxpayers? You know, we the people out there working on that more perfect union and trying to provide for the general welfare and whatever. Are we going to dredge the whole? And then where are we going to put the heavy metal filth when we get it up from the bottom of the river? Tis a puzzlement. Yeah. So, my heart goes out to the people who live along and rely on the Animas River. Oh, God, what lead levels are more than 3,500 times the allowable maximum. In the river right now. And there really is what is referred to over the last few years as a teachable moment in all of this. The EPA was formed in 1972. Prior to 1977, a mining company that got done and found all the wealth that there was to find in a place like Colorado that has something on the order of 23,000 abandoned mines, well, once they'd found all the gold, or silver, or whatever, they just walked away and left a filthy, toxic mess for somebody else to clean up. You know, the rubes. Again, we the people. So as far as I'm concerned, the next time the National Mining Association issues a press release saying that some mining concern intends to be a good steward of the land, you know, they can suck a radish for all I care. A big penis-shaped radish. According to Peter Butler with the Animas River Stakeholders Group, being interviewed by National Petroleum Radio, Peter Butler said it was known that there was a pool of water back in the Gold King mine, and EPA had a plan to remove the water and treat it, you know, slowly. The things didn't go quite the way they planned, and there was a lot more water in there than they thought. It just kind of burst out of the mine. Now, this stuff's probably going to be toxic to all trout species, with the exception of brook trout. Brook trout living in this reach are likely stressed much of the year. Oh, so it's not going to be toxic to brook trout, because the brook trout are pretty well near dead anyway. That's reassuring. Once upon a time, human beings living along the Animas River could probably rely on, say, spearfishing for those self-same trout. But that's the problem with places that have been blessed by a mining mono-economy. You got no idea what's really there. 23,000 mines, and the thing is, after you mine for a while, one mine is going to connect to another mine, and another mine is going to connect to another mine. And pretty soon, you've got an entire network of toxicity flowing around underneath your very feet. I mean, we know a little bit about this here. I'm sure they know more than a little bit about this in Colorado. Now, they can say more than 23,000 mines in Colorado. That means at least they're trying to find them. You know what kind of an answer we give in West Virginia when you ask when they ask how many abandoned coal mines are there in West Virginia? The state of West Virginia says, we'd love to tell you, but we ain't got no clue. No idea. Because just about everywhere you could get a pick or a shovel into the earth, somebody was going after coal. I remember talking to a technician who came here on some install job one day, and he was explaining to me that before he went into that particular line of work, he had been a coal miner, an underground coal miner over in Clay County. And he said, there was 6-foot seams of coal down there, but we couldn't go any further because if we'd mined any more, there was every probability in the world they was going to either let the mine loose into the Elk River or let the Elk River loose into the mine. You might recall that the Elk River was the river into which 10,000 gallons of God only knows what kind, what level of deadly poison was dumped back in January 2014. That Elk River. I can take you to places not too awfully far from here where the water is still running out of the mine and it runs out as orange as the Animas River. And by the way, just as a general warning, there's every possibility in the world that in stopping the deluge of poison at the Gold King mine, they might start one somewhere else, because water's funny that way. Taylor McKinnon is with a spokesperson with the Center for Biological Diversity and said, endangered species downstream of this spill are already afflicted by the same toxic compounds like mercury and selenium that may be in this water. These species are hanging by a thread, and every new bit of toxic exposure makes a bad situation worse. EPA's downplaying of potential impacts is troubling and raises deeper questions about the thoroughness of its mine reclamation efforts. All right, I can live with that. Hey, can anybody mention threats to the human population? Yeah, I know. Snotty little human-centered bigot, Bob Kincaid, you are. Right. But human populations are affected, too. Just wanted to mention that in there while we're fretting about the trout. But more than EPA's screw-up, this betrays something else. Because every time a Republican is in the White House, the EPA is put under horrible pressure because that president will appoint an EPA administrator, and the EPA and everything downstream, if you will, feels the results of hacks and flacks and industry executives and people who say, yeah, but what about the jobs? What about those hard-working miners out there a-feeding of their families? Mm-hmm. Well, the jobs never last long. Maybe they can last a generation in some cases. Seldom do. Mining is an itinerant profession for just about anybody who does the real mining end of it. When one mine plays out, you move to the next one. It takes about, in terms of surface mining in Appalachia, mountaintop removal, it takes about 5 years to take down 5 million acres, and that's 5,000 acres, 5,000 acres, and that's, you know, that's about 10, 15 people running heavy equipment and drill operations and blasting technicians. That. So while I wanted to mention this story in particular on this Titanic Tuesday, because while the blame falls squarely upon the EPA for this, and I really would like to see some more detail, I think some actual journalism could be beneficial here. I'd like to know if those really were EPA employees, you know, civil servants, GS this or that, who did this, or were they people hired by the EPA from, wait a minute, the private sector? You always need some reverb on private sector because it's so sacred and holy, and it's the only, ask a Republican, but private sector is the only thing that can actually get anything done in Merca. Merca? The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Right. Were these actual EPA employees, or were these folks who said, oh, no, we can take care of this. Yeah, we got this covered. Ah, so we'll clean up the mine. Yeah. I'd like to know that. But as we ponder this, the overarching reality of this story, let's remember that the EPA does not exist in a vacuum. This is not some sort of firebrand defense of the EPA because, well, what they've let happen here in West Virginia shouldn't, oh, God, it shouldn't happen to ISIL. But nonetheless, I believe giving credit where credit is due and putting blame where it belongs. And over the course of an 8-year Republican presidential administration, a tremendous amount of harm can be done to an administrative agency. I suspect if that journalism was done, we would find that to be at least a partial answer in the case of the EPA. But it's even deeper than that. Because what's in the Animas River right now, and I said this about the Deepwater Horizon spill as well, that's not just selenium and mercury and lead and arsenic and barium and beryllium and manganese and magnesium and aluminum and just about the entire heavy metals end of the periodic table. That's capitalism in the Animas River. That's the free market. Wait a minute. Free market in the Animas River. That's more than 100 years of policymaking that says that whatever somebody with some money wants to do to the land or the people, or as it turns out, both, and the aminals, is okay. Because money. It's 1977 when, after a generation of struggling against the horrors of strip mining, the Sierra Club and a few other organizations persuaded the Congress to pass something called SMACRA, the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. SMACRA was supposed to provide a remedy to people who had had their lands ruined, their lives taken, their worlds upended by out-of-control, runaway, awash in money coal companies and other mining concerns. Jimmy Carter signed it into law, and on the day he signed it into law, he said he had no faith in it whatsoever, because it was not, in fact, going to protect anyone. It was going to enshrine what these predators were doing in law. It is, in point of fact, the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act of 1977 that gave us, that birthed, that served as midwife to the rise of surface mining on steroids that here in Appalachia we refer to as mountaintop removal. SMACRA did that. It didn't prevent it. It did that. And there's the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act doesn't actually provide for clean water. The Clean Water Act provides mechanisms whereby massive amounts of money, as manifested in the persons of capitalists, can get licenses and variances and approvals to pollute water. Huh? The Army Corps of Engineers oversees things like 404 Clean Water Act permits. And their mission in life is to let it happen, not to prevent it from happening. This is a philosophical thing. The default position in this country is to allow the money to do just about anything it damned well wants and sort out the consequences later. It really is an overall governing strategy of shoot first and ask questions later, or kill them all and let God sort them out. That's how you get the Animas River. That's how you get 10,000 gallons of deadly poison in the Elk River. That's how you get all of these things, and it's not limited to the United States. There's the same operating philosophy in Canada. That's how you wind up with another mining sludge dam break that poisoned an entire river in British Columbia. That's how you get decisions that allow bomb trains to go across the high Canadian prairie and blow up in Lac Mégantic, Quebec. That's how you have sludge dam breaches in Mexico. Because government is of, by, and for the predatory wealth class. And I suppose this is no place for a discussion of the future of humanity as a species. Hell, generally speaking. I'll bet you Cecil the Lion got a hell of a lot more press coverage than the Animas River. Even though it had a bunch of fish in it. And other aquatic and amphibian life. Frogs, lizards, turtles, snakes. Okay, we won't worry so much about the snakes. I'm kidding. So we're not going to have that existential discussion. Well, I guess we are, aren't we? There's no way to get around it, is there? This shoot first and ask questions later approach has got to go. And I don't know, but I suspect this means scrapping everything and starting over from a legal standpoint. And having an EPA whose first job is not to say yes, but to say no. See, right now, the EPA, with all due respect for professional sex workers, it's a hard damn job. The EPA and the various other agencies in government, both federal and state, they're like prostitutes. If you have enough money and you walk up to them, their job is to say yes to whatever it is you want to do. Now, there may be more or less money involved in terms of permitting and bonds and things like that, depending on what you want to do. I mean, you get the idea. It's not that they want to the planet. It's how they want to the planet. I mean, if you want to just it a little bit and leave, well, that's one permit. It's another permit if you want to do it while wearing chaps and velvet, you know, velvet handcuffs. You know, as Carol notes, we're all going to die. If it ain't guns, it'll be starvation and thirst. Ron in Oregon pointing out, does anyone besides me see the irony in the name of the Colorado River? Okay, the spelling ain't right, but damn it, the animus is there in spades, even if it is a posthumous comment from some long-dead rich miner. And that's true, Carol. No whore ever got so much for so little. But a prostitute's job is saying yes. And then the haggling begins over the price. If this country and this planet is to remain a fit place for human beings to live, especially in the multitudes in which we insist on living on it, then we're going to have to junk the whole damn system and retool it to say no. To say absolutely not. This is an abandoned gold mine from God knows how far back. Where do you reckon the gold is now? Is it in motherboards in some tiny little amount? Is it in the wedding ring that some hopeful couple will purchase tomorrow? Or is it in a vault somewhere, being valuable? Did I say Ron in Oregon? I meant Ron in Canada. Damn it. Yeah, Bob from the other Ron in North Carolina. What? Where did Oregon come from? I promise, it's just root beer in the cup. Diet damn root beer. Now I'll get the emails about artificial sweeteners. But to the extent that you see coverage of this story, at least have a little tickle in the back of your mind that looks at it and says, hey, they're really not saying much about the long-term impact on human health, are they? Wonder why that is. Is it because there's no percentage in talking about that? Is it because to talk about that would be entirely too terrifying? Guess what? The folks living along this river in Colorado and New Mexico, and pretty soon probably Arizona, well, they're already terrified. But it's kind of like the roulette that we play with the Second Amendment freedom protectors. Everybody has to stand at the table and watch the marble spin around. And you're at the table too, no matter where you are. Or how good you think your state government is, or bad, at taking care of the land that the people live on. Now, God knows if you're in a place like Alabama or Louisiana or the most environmentally toxified state in the Union, Texas, oddly enough, or not, you got a lot to be worried about. I mean, there you are. You're standing down there at the check stop one day getting some kolachkis, and the next thing you know, the whole damn town blows up because the fertilizer plant just blew. One day you're walking around the looking for ramps in the emerging through the frost of a bitter winter in the earliest inklings of spring in the Pinoki Hills, and you get back to Ashland and you find out that a damn mining company wants to come to town and blow the Pinoki Hills straight to hell, dig a hole 1,400 feet deep, 22 miles long and a half a mile wide, right next to Lake Superior. And you're supposed to just say, well, okay, that'll work. And by God, if anybody stands up to oppose these things, what do they call you? Oh, well, you're an environmentalist. And on right-wing radio, they'll append the word wacko to you. That's okay. I've been one for a while. I'm kind of testy about being called an environmentalist anymore. These issues have assumed entirely too much of an existential nature for it to be some parlor game played by privileged, wealthy white people in their spare time, which is kind of what environmentalism is. No, this is human rights. But they'll call you that. They'll call you a tree hugger. Environmentalist. They'll say that you don't understand about the economy, and you don't understand about how we got to have jobs, and how the company's going to be a good environmental steward. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Buy gold. Buy high and sell cheap. Buy gold now. That's why we advertise on right-wing radio programs all over the country. Buy gold now. Ever wonder why you don't hear these stories on right-wing radio programs? Well, A, because you don't listen to right-wing radio programs, but B, because they're actually advertising for the people who make these problems. Now, these were old gold mines. It's not like there aren't new ones. Oh, no. And then, not too awfully far, relatively speaking, from where this this disaster is unfolding and downflowing, a few hundred miles, maybe 1,000 tops, there is a place called Oak Flat, which, since the Eisenhower administration, has been protected space. Since about 10,000 years before the Eisenhower administration, it has been sacred space. Sacred, I believe, to the Apache people. Sacred no more. Because Senators Jeff Flake and John McCain have done their master's bidding and done it well. See, John McCain, whatever else the T-Rump may say about him, he's not his own man. He's a creature. He's owned. He has no... what am I looking for here? He has no independent self-actualization. He exists only to do the bidding of people who have large sums of money. And a group of people who have large sums of money, called Rio Tinto, said, "John, old shoe, we certainly would like to get our hands on that Oak Flat area there. Those bothersome Indians continue to act as if it's something special about it. It's just another godforsaken place in that godforsaken state of yours, John, old boy. Why don't you and that dashing young Mr. Flake do something to see if you can't get Oak Flat into our hands and out of theirs? Because we would like to dig a great goddamn big hole in the ground there, because you see, John, old fellow, you, John, there's copper in the ground there. And granted, we don't live there, John, and you don't live there, so, you know, screw 'em. What do we care? But we would like to get the copper, because it's going to mean a great deal of money to us and to our shareholders. You see." And John McCain and Jeff Flake, being people not capable of their own self-motivation, but instead compelled to wait for, as the dog did in the old logo for RCA Victor Records, his master's voice. I mean, what do you think it feels like to be John McCain? I mean, no, let's not make a movie. Really, though. There's the veneer, the patina that you're a war hero, yada, 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 yada. But every day you get up and you realize, I have no independent will. Here I am, the best part of eight decades upon the planet, and I'm just doing what somebody else wants me to do because of money. I occupy a seat in the most powerful deliberative body in the world. And I can't even do what's morally right or ethically just. Instead, I have to dispossess people from land they have been using for 10,000 years so some fellows can destroy it because there's copper under it. Whew. Yeah. I would not care to be that person. I could not stand to be that person. I read an article, and I posted it on my Facebook page earlier this morning, from Esquire, an interview with Keith Richards. And he remarked upon the fact that whatever else his career with the Stones has been, it has meant that he has never, ever, ever had a boss. He's never had anyone in his life to whom he's had to say, "Yes, sir, get right on it." Nope. John McCain has a boss. John McCain has lots of bosses. Anybody who walks into John McCain's office with a great wad of money and says the right password, conservative values, and you can screw some native people right off of 10,000 years worth of their heritage. And by the way, along the course of the Animas River, Luda points out, Bob, the initial spill and a lot of that river are on the reservation, which is why no one gave a flying until it spread out to Colorado and started affecting the white tourist areas. Typical Merca, who cares? They're savages living on land that we gave them, thank you very much. Luda says, I'm sick of being shit on as a people, but I'm sure every white person in Merca will suddenly be 1/16th Cherokee so they understand our struggle. Got some, it's like my buddy Matt says, I got some white in me. I can't prove it. Yeah. Thank you for that, Luda. Tim from L.A. says, where's the gold? With the people who decided to buy gold in the first place so they can protect themselves from Obama when he decides to create a one-world government allowing the value of the fiat dollar to collapse.
I'm cranky old Ron Paul, and if you'll go to this here website, I've got a message for you that I think will scare you right through your depends.
Yeah. Just wondering, why are the right-wingers pissed at the contamination? I mean, isn't this the cost of being free from the eventual one-world currency Alex Jones spews about?
Right! That's the thing. That's the free market in that river. That's capitalism. By God, if you live along the Animas River and you've got the livestock or whatever, and you have ever, 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 ever in your godforsaken, misbegotten life voted for a Republican, that poison in that river, you earned it. You didn't just earn it, you begged for it. And you have gotten your wish.
And I don't, Irish Dave, I don't know how much of it's public versus private or Bureau of Land Management. I don't know. I suspect, being as it's Colorado, some significant portion of it is, in fact, land held by the federal government in trust for we the people of the United States working on that more perfect union. So that's the filibobster for this Titanic Tuesday, the 11th day of August, 2015. You, of course, are welcome to chime in with your Titanic Tuesday nominees. If you would like to do so via phone, the number, of course, 304-574-0780. 8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. That works well, too. It is also Tuesday, so that means we have the Green News Report coming up via Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen. So let's find out what's on your mind. It's easy to do. We welcome first-time callers, because this is a place where it's easy to no. It's welcoming, it's neighborly, it's open. The next thing you know, you'll be all nervous and mega dittos from Busted Knuckle Bob. And then we'll settle right down, we'll settle into the conversation, and you'll go, dang, that was just like talk to somebody. So try it out. One way or the other. First time, old time, however. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you for coming home. Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, slowly being eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small. Luck has left me standing so tall. Gold, always believing in your soul. You've got the power to know you're indestructible. Always believing, 'cause you are gold. Partners in crime. It's only 2 years ago, the man with the suit and the face, he knew that he was there on the case. Now he's in love with you, he's in love with you. My love is like a high prison wall, and you could leave me standing so
August 11, 2015.
It's a state of emergency in northern New Mexico. The Animas River has turned an alarming shade of yellow.
Toxic mine spill contaminates waterways across three states.
You worked with Democrats and President Obama when it came to climate change.
Only one mention of climate change in both Fox News debates.
We don't want to destroy people's jobs based on some theory that's not proven.
Ohio Governor John Kasich backtracks on global warming. Plus, Shell Oil breaks up with Alec.
All of those breakups and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
These bullshitters cover their unwillingness to act under the guise of unending inquiry. We can't do anything because we don't yet know everything. We cannot take action on climate change until everyone in the world agrees gay marriage vaccines won't cause our children to marry goats who are going to come for our guns.
Man, are we going to miss him. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, 17 Republican candidates made it up onto the Fox News stage in two separate debates. And the moderators from Fox News could only come up with one single question for one single candidate concerning climate change.
Yeah, we think that climate change is going to be a thing in the 2016 presidential campaign, but apparently not until the general.
Well, or at least not on Fox News.
Correct.
Where climate change doesn't exist.
That's true. But more on that in a moment. First,
stay out of the water. It's a warning that will continue tonight and tomorrow in the Four Corners.
Muck was released yesterday while a crew used heavy machinery to clean up at an abandoned part of the Gold King mine that's north of Silverton.
The Environmental Protection Agency does say that an EPA crew that was trying to clean up toxic mining sludge that's been leaking from an abandoned gold mine for decades instead accidentally released an estimated 3 million gallons of the mine's toxic wastewater into the Animas River in southern Colorado.
Way to go, EPA.
The bright yellow plume contains toxic metals and is flowing into New Mexico and Utah. It's prompted states of emergency in Colorado, New Mexico, and from the president of the Navajo Nation. Towns downstream have shut off municipal water intakes. There are tens of thousands of toxic abandoned mines across the West. That's according to Colorado University professor Mark Williams.
These problems happen all the time. Almost every abandoned mine has the potential for that situation.
Unlike the mining company that abandoned the mine, the EPA has taken responsibility for the spill and the cleanup. And remember, with all of these abandoned mines, taxpayers foot the cleanup bill.
Not the mining companies who make all the profits?
Nope, they just leave.
You're welcome, mining companies who make all the profits.
In politics, as we already mentioned, the first Republican debates of the 2016 presidential campaign concluded with only one mention of climate change. That went to South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who attacked Hillary Clinton and falsely claimed that action on climate change will destroy the economy.
In her world, cap and trade will dominate. That we will destroy the economy in the name of helping the environment. In my world, we'll focus on energy independence and a clean environment. When it comes to fossil fuels, we're going to find more here and use less. Over time, we're going to become energy independent.
Of course, we should also note that a policy of extracting even more fossil fuels is the exact opposite of action on global warming.
Yeah, it was odd. He was asked about climate change, and he said we need to drill for more oil. Go figure.
Surprisingly, NBC's Meet the Press host Chuck Todd on Sunday decided to ask Republican presidential candidate Ohio Governor John Kasich if he accepts the scientific consensus that climate change is man-made.
Well, I think that man absolutely affects the environment, but as to whether, you know, what the impact is, the overall impact, I think that's a legitimate debate. Of course, we have to be sensitive to it, but we don't want to destroy people's jobs based on some theory that's not proven.
Right. Why destroy people's jobs? Let's destroy their planet instead.
Well, interestingly, Kasich's campaign staff later clarified his remarks, saying, quote, "The governor has long believed climate change is real. We know it is real. We know man has an impact, and we know we need to do something."
So his hedging on Meet the Press was Just to try to trick the base, I guess?
Apparently.
What's your game, John Kasich?
Finally, some good news. Oil giant Shell Oil has broken up with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch brothers-funded right-wing group, because ALEC, Shell says, does not support action on climate change. In a statement, Shell said ALEC's position is, quote, clearly inconsistent with Shell's official recognition of, quote, the importance of the climate challenge.
Did Shell Oil say that before or after they started drilling for oil up in the Arctic?
After.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, they want to have it both ways. They want to have it both ways. They know it's not right.
And 16 minutes past the hour. I always enjoy the Green News Report, especially when it dovetails so nicely with what I've been filibobstering about. No, I had no idea that was going to happen. I never listened to that before it started. This is the Horn for a Titanic Tuesday, and I am happy to announce that our good friend Cindy in the Great Northwest took... Now this is becoming feudish. She took the odd change that Carol Baker got us started with and rounded it back to a zero. I think there's some pity being taken on little old me. And then, because that's how things work, Ron got us started. And we're actually into tomorrow's fundraising, which would be really nice to accomplish. I can tell you. I can tell you for a fact that we are. Wait a minute. $81.89. No, 61 cents. No. Carry the 96. As far as tomorrow's fundraising goes, we have $100. No, we have $181.33 to go. Yes, there, $181.33. Meanwhile, let's run over to the stress line and see where Jim is. First of all, hey Jim.
I said, Bob, I'm still in Louisiana, Stan, except I'm outside New Orleans and in Metairie.
Oh.
Getting closer to the airport, crashing with my brother and sister-in-law's house, and it's closer to the airport.
Yeah, it's always, I love landing in New Orleans. It's, that airport is just... inches away from just being, you know, water.
Yeah. Well, the Vegas airport is just, it's not that far. I mean, like, anywhere, it's like Denver, it's like 25 miles outside of Denver. But, you know, the New Orleans airport is pretty, not that far away. And then ditto with Las Vegas, it's, you know, it's like a 20, well, maybe 30, 25, 30 buck cab ride. To, you know.
No,
I mean, you're not that far out.
No, I remember flying in there. That's the Louis Armstrong International Airport, isn't it?
Yeah. Thank goodness they named it something decent. So, yeah. So now you really did something for the city.
Yeah, mattered. That's okay. In another couple of years, they'll name the, I don't know, Piyush Jindal Memorial Cesspit or something.
That was thinking, dude. Read my mind when she started saying it. It would be, yeah. Well, he could be the next president in a pig's eye, but you know, well, you never know with this country. But But what you were talking about, well, I missed like the first part of it, but what you're doing in, it sounds like Arizona, not that far away from, you said the Apaches, right? So that's basically Arizona area. Yeah, it's not that far from where I'm headed. It's like, I think I've said this before, no matter what state, no matter where you go in this country, the capitalism, as you mentioned, is in the process of destroying it. They don't even make an effort to try and preserve it or coexist with it, which is crazy. I mean, I don't get why they don't get that they are separate from the environment. You're part of it. If you don't have an environment, you're not there.
No planet, no economy was the way John Fox once put it, and that made perfect sense to me.
Right.
But the thing is, like with the Oak Flat issue down in Arizona, it just boggles the mind. The white folks near the area are going, "Yeah, hot damn jobs, yeehaw!" And the native people are going, "Stupid white people, do you still require water to live? That's the only aquifer we have, stupid white people."
No, it's just like water all over. It's just like with all the fracking going on throughout the country. It's just like, and like you said, it maybe a generation is that long. And just like they did they're in the process of doing in West Virginia and various other parts of the country.
I mean, I got a story here, Jim, and it's not directly related to the Animas River or Oak Flat. But this comes out of Texas Stan. Dallas County Court. Guy named Cody Murray, who's 38 years old. He's a father of four. He's married. He's suing EOG Resources, Fairway Resources, LLC, and three subsidiaries of Fairway, all created for the express purpose of evading legal liability. And the allegations inside the complaint say that he suffered severe, and I would assume that's at least second or third degree burns, on his arms, upper back, neck, forehead, and nose. And the suit papers also mention significant neurological damage. The suit papers say he is permanently disfigured and disabled. And all of this happened when his water well, Jim, blew up because it had been filled up with poisons from a nearby fracking well. By the way, his father, his wife, and their four-year-old daughter were also injured in the explosion.
Yeah, I'm going to be sarcastic. He doesn't seem like a team player. Can he just take one for the team? I almost have to do that.
Why does he hate America?
Yeah. It's relentless. Like I said, go anywhere, just about anywhere in this country. Oregon, you mentioned,
And I guess that was just a grass fire. I think Tim may have been a little bit mistaken, toward the end of the program last night. There were no bomb trains that I was aware of, but still, this story out of Texas is terrifying, because if it can happen to one, who else can it happen to? He's a rancher, Cody Murray is, and I feel a tremendous degree of sympathy. I really, really do. I would like to sit down and ask him, Cody, did you ever vote for George W. Bush when he was running for governor? Cody, did you vote for George W. Bush when he was running for president? Did you, Cody? Can you tell me that, Cody? Because, see, if you did, or if you voted for Rick Perry, or if you voted for any Republican in the Texas legislature, you kind of voted to have your well explode.
Exactly. And not only that.
A horrifying story. He's a rancher, Jim, and the suit papers say, at the flip of the switch, Cody heard a whooshing sound,
which he instantly recognized from his work in the oil and gas industry. Not a lot of progressives working there. And instinctively picked his father up and physically threw him back and away from the entry to the pump house. In that instant, a giant fireball erupted from the pump house, burning Cody and Jim, who were at the entrance to the pump house, as well as Cody's wife Ashley and daughter A.M., who were approximately 20 feet away. This was his water well. This was not a gas well. There wasn't a gas well anywhere in the immediate proximity. But there was drilling on property near him. And his water well filled up with methane, and when he flipped the switch for the pump, the electrical circuit ignited the gas, and whoosh!
Yeah, well, that's just because, like,
yeah, because freedom.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like, I ate some sushi. I don't know, you know, how, where the fish came from exactly, you know. I still eat red meat. Right.
But no, in this case, it's like walking into a sushi joint in Tokyo and saying, I want the fugu fish, and make sure and leave some of the yummy poisonous liver in it. Because he kind of, oh, I feel like I must be some kind of awful jerk for saying it. But he contributed to his own problem.
You know, I want the Fukushima fish. that's the only way you can, in a way, only way I can kind of deal with it is just get real sarcastic and real sardonic, because it's just, and like, you know, like you mentioned, in the 70s, they did, get some EPA laws. They started the EPA. You know, our old buddy Tricky Dick. It's one of the few good things. I guess he did.
Yeah, but from the moment the EPA was created, Jim, it was a captive creature to the industrialists and the money and the capitalists who were just blood eyed intent on destroying whatever it was that would reap them a dollar.
Right, and, you know, when she started saying that, I kind of figured that, you know, that's what you're going to say. Because that's just because capitalism. Everything's just capitalism. You know, so.
Right, and freedom.
Freedom to, freedom. Maybe be one of the.
Yeah, freedom. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Yeah, Janis Joplin put it well. Well. So that's my little rant. Let somebody else get through. You can't really. People don't really. They don't want to understand. They don't think it's going to happen to them, or they'll be able to move far enough away or something. Yeah. So another happy call to him.
All right, well, see.
At least I'm aware.
Yeah, well, yeah, and safe travels to you as you go, Jim.
All right. Take you later. Take it easy, Bob.
All right, we'll see you, Jim. Bye now. Presently in Louisiana, Stan, and outbound. That's our buddy Jim. And let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Ron, not from Oregon, but some other place with an O in it. I mean, Oregon, Ottawa, Ontario. Yeah, whatever. Hey, Ron. And it's working and not making any creepy noises either.
Oh, good. The flatulence filter is working. Ooh.
Is that what we... I think that's what we call in the broadcast industry, the de-asser.
I have to disagree with you mildly, of course, on one assertion you made.
Is this the Oregon thing?
No, the Texas farmer who'd worked for the gas industry and to some degree was responsible for his own condition.
Okay.
This guy's a rancher in Texas. They aren't rich for the most part.
No.
A job comes by, he takes it, he makes some money, not a lot, and then eventually he gets decimated by the after effects of the same job he did. That's not a hell of a lot different from West Virginia coal miners who knew working in mines wasn't safe, wasn't good for the environment, but they did it anyway because he had to make a living.
Sure.
I can't really blame the rancher. I would sue him. I would support him in suing for everything he could get.
Oh, I didn't say I don't support him in his lawsuit. Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. Then we're back on the same song.
But I just. I think we kind of have to live in reality world, Ron. I mean, you know, it was great while the paychecks were coming, right?
Yep.
And I'm sure that if there's. I know a few people who work in the oil and gas patch or who have, and they're not prone to talking kindly about the damn tree huggers. They're trying to take my job. We're achieving energy independence out here. Right? Tree huggers going to make us freeze to death in the dark. I mean, that's you know what? That's what the coal workers who are now getting their asses laid off by the thousands say. That's what they said. They said, you know, the tree huggers are going to take their job. Turns out their job got took without the tree huggers doing a damn thing at all.
And they find it really hard to blame a Republican or a Chinese.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is because of that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper in the White House, and his radical Kenyan Muslim communist Islamo-fascist EPA.
Well, Bob, I'm certain you'd agree that it's really hard to wipe out ignorance with a stroke of a pen. This is something that's going to take a couple of generations to change. But
when does that kick in, Ron? And I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but we've had three or four generations to figure it out by now. And oddly enough, and this is my larger point, since you mentioned coal miners, they did figure it out. My grandfather was not in love with the coal company. My father wasn't either. That generation knew damned good and well who was who in that struggle. But once the coal company started referring to the miners as our heroic miners, or better yet, team members, then, well, golly, we're all on the same side, and they love us. And now, of course, they're seeking to cut the health care off of somebody who's got cancer in the middle of chemotherapy right now.
Yeah, that's self-esteem 101. I'm not going to belabor the point.
Okay. I think it's a worthy topic.
But I think we're in violent agreement. Two generations, three or four. The Canadian example I would point to is Newfoundland. It's not pronounced Newfoundland like many do.
I don't.
I did when I got here. And it took me a little while to figure out the smirks. But Newfoundland was what in Canada literally was referred to for years, generations, as a have-not province. Now, that's relevant because in Canada, the federal government routinely, based on economic results provided by Stats Canada, and I'll get back to Stats Canada in a moment, but Stats Canada routinely registers economic inflows and output per capita, GDP, etc., for every province in Canada. And if they're below the norm, the economic norm or median across Canada, they're regarded as a have-not. That means they get transfer payments from the federal government to bring them back into balance with the median. In other words, theoretically, all Canadians are equal economically. Well, Newfoundland, for generations, has been a relatively impoverished province in the sense they had no real means to exploit their natural resources. Nobody was interested in going to Newfoundland or Labrador. And then they discovered believe it or not,
oil. Well, of course.
In huge quantities on the continental shelf, just off Newfoundland, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia. And all of a sudden, Newfoundland became a half prop. Well, suddenly being a decade. But in the interim, you know, everything got established. The oil wells, offshore rigs were up and functioning and working well. But there were still a lot of unemployed Newfoundland folk. And then Alberta began to find a way to exploit tar sands. Whole herds of Newfoundlanders and Maritimers in general moved to Alberta and northern Saskatchewan, which is one of the best places in North America outside of Newfoundland and Labrador to get fish and chips now, by the way. Just thought I'd mention that.
Right there in downtown Calgary.
Right down, and no, we're talking about Fort McMurray. Which
oh,
is
wow.
Way to hell. You look out to beyond, it's way to hell and gone beyond beyond.
I've got a general idea of where Fort McMurray is.
It's in the north, and now the oil boom has become a bust, and folks are moving back to Newfoundland with all the money they made out there. Property prices are going up, and people are filing for what's called POGI up here, which is unemployment insurance. Oh, I'm going to digress for a minute. I want to tell you about a unique Canadian welfare scheme.
Yes.
I've never run into it anywhere else in the world. And in Canada, it was referred to as a 1040 plan. If you worked for 10 weeks in Newfoundland, you qualified for unemployment insurance from the feds for 40 weeks. And what would happen was, and the factories went along with it, and the government went along with it, was four or five people would get together and say, okay, I'm going to apply for this job at the fish cannery or wherever. And the company would hire them on for 10 weeks and then lay them off. The other four guys would be right in the queue and move in, and five guys would do a job for a year. And all five of them qualified for 40 weeks of unemployment. And it was called a 1040 plan. Worked like a hot damn until they discovered oil. And all the folks from out in Alberta and northern Saskatchewan started sending their money home and building businesses that didn't want to have people that moved in and out every 10 weeks where they had to retrain them. Caused quite a kerfluffle for a while. But I've never run into an economic support system. It was one of those wink-wink, nudge-nudge systems that was acknowledged by the federal government. Otherwise, everywhere else in Canada, it's 26 weeks for unemployment. In Newfoundland, it was 40. That gave everybody a chance to have a two-week vacation paid.
It's lovely if it works. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if the United States, I mean, there's a good conversation going on in the chat room right now about how American workers are treated. You know, there's no federal law requiring paid sick leave. We're the only industrialized country in the world that has no legally mandated annual leave. This according to Doctor Who in the room. In every country, including except Canada and Japan and the U.S., which averages 13 days a year, workers get at least 20 paid vacation days. In France and Finland, they get 30, an entire month off, paid, every year. Right.
Man,
you've inspired mail coming from, yay, verily, Calgary. Kelly says, Boyd Seafood in Calgary has the best fish and chips extant.
I have been there.
I know you had?
Yeah. I'm a bit of a connoisseur of weird and obscure crap, but that's one of the places I've been to.
And, by the way, speaking of words that aren't pronounced like they look, yeah, English is full of those things, Ron. You said Newfoundland, and I knew it was Newfoundland. And what I always find humorous is when there is a story out of N-O-R-F-O-L-K, Virginia.
We're not going to pronounce it, are we, Bob?
News anchors will run rings around themselves trying not to pronounce the word the way it's pronounced. And so they'll say "nor." And it was so funny because I had a brother-in-law once. Actually, he was my parents' son-in-law. We argued back and forth. They'd say, "Your brother-in-law." I said, "No, your son-in-law." And he was stationed there. And all the good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered folks down there would say, "Well, and so he's stationed at Norfolk?" No, ma'am, he's stationed at Norfolk.
Yeah. Well, and
their eyes would bug and their ears would turn red and there'd be a little gasp. I mean, it's Norfolk.
Well, we had a cruder vernacular for that part of the world when I was in the Navy. It's a big Navy base down there.
Oh, I know. My uncle was the head man at Norfolk NAS.
Yeah, we went by somewhat different acronym, but we can't go there anymore, Bob.
No,
it's not there. It's not there anymore. Tom Wolfe was right.
Well, yeah, you can't go home again.
Yeah,
but okay. Speaking of things maritime, though, and this has to do with linguistic dialect, though. In a ship, almost all of them have, to one degree or another, a naval vessel has an forecastle.
Yeah, forecastle.
Yeah, it ain't no damn forecastle.
No.
But it goes back to a time in English naval history when there was a stern castle and a forecastle.
Yeah.
Because wasn't that where you put your archers?
Yep.
And then after that, your riflemen, your marines?
No.
But because
to this day,
I don't know what dialect it is, but it became forecastle.
And to this day, marines, at least on aircraft carriers, are berthed towards the stern end of the ship.
I'll be darned.
And they go to the stern end of the ship to do their target practice. But those piece of crap M16 rifles are given. And do things like throw watermelons off the stern, and then they come up and float, and they wait until they're 250 yards away in a bobbing wake and take them out with one shot.
Well, that must feel terribly heroic. Maybe that's where, who was it? Was it Bob Barr back during the hunting of the cleanest, who, in order to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster, went and used a pistol to shoot watermelons in his backyard?
And compared it to an exploding skull?
Yeah.
But back to the maritime stuff. You know, there are a lot of unique maritime nautical terms. I enjoy watching a show called Deadliest Catch occasionally.
I've seen it.
And they went, the guy, you know, these are guys that are making a living by their hands with a hell of a lot of money invested.
Portions of which said hands can be excised from the human body rather precipitously. Yeah.
Bye, it's gone. Yep. And they're in 35 and 40-foot seas, having to quarter those seas, which means you can't take the wave straight over the bow. You got to get that whole up and down and side-to-side experience all at the same time.
I don't see how anybody catches anything. It'd just be all vomit all the time for me. Hell, yeah. I was seasick on a cruise ship, for God's sakes, until I figured out the trick.
Yeah, and one skipper made a statement that I hadn't heard for years, which was, "It's getting kind of nautical out here." I went through a typhoon in the Northern Pacific. We were heading over to that unnamed place in Southeast Asia, and we got diverted way to hell north quickly because a guy on a U.S. Navy seagoing tug had a ruptured appendix. We were the closest medical facility, and we had to get within about 150 nautical miles so that the helicopter could go pick him up and bring him back, because we had full hospital on board and everything else. And our flight deck was 96 feet above the water on a carrier. And we were taking what was called green water over the flight deck. And we were quartering into the waves. And it was left and right. And you're watching along the center line of the ship. In most compartments, they've got an inclinometer of some variation, usually built by the guys. That tilts one way or the other, and it's like the old high school protractor, and free-floating dial, and when you get to a 15-degree swell, it's rolled over 15 degrees one way or the other. And we hit swells up there that took us to 30 degrees of roll and about 15 degrees of pitch, which is a lot on a 1,000-plus-foot 100,000-ton vessel.
That's a lot of steel moving rather quickly and
Yeah. But
may I ask what carrier?
USS Ranger.
Okay, yeah.
And the Ranger was just hauled from Bremerton, Washington over 2 months around the Cape and pulled into Brownsville, Texas to be cut up and turned into razor blades. There's a whole Facebook page on the Ranger. For some reason, people get very attached to the ships to keep them alive.
Oh, my father wept when the news came in that the Essex had been scrapped.
Yeah.
By the way, your brother in the fraternity of Ron and Raleigh says,
He didn't start Ron, did he?
No. He said, there was an old cheer. It went, we don't smoke, we don't drink, Norfolk. Yuck. Yeah.
Well, we have not yet used the exact expression that sailors used, but anyway, back to the North Pacific and the raging seas.
Yes.
Cue the howling winds.
Absolutely.
And the flying spray. We're flying at our maximum speed, which was about 35 miles an hour in rough seas. We could go faster than that in calm seas, which is that's a fair whack of speed for something that big. And I remembered the old salts would never pay attention to 15, 20 degree rolls one way or the other. And after a while, you got to be an old salt and you didn't pay any attention to them either. But there's a rhythm. It's like a reggae song. Every reggae song starts at the top and goes back again. It's like the old Pistons. Well, we'd roll along and we'd get a 20 or 25 degree swell and we'd go up, and then a wave would catch us on our side occasionally and we'd go another 5 or 10 degrees. We're now at 35 degrees, which is damn steep. And even the old salts would look up and go, look at each other and go, okay, where's this going to go? And then it would stop and come back and the old salts would pretend nothing happened. For what it's worth, carriers are designed to take a 45-degree roll in either direction, which is an amazing piece of naval engineering and architecture. Something that's that big and looks that unbalanced that can roll 45 degrees and keep right on steaming. It's amazing.
That is impressive. That reminds me of the engineering statistic of, you know, that bridge that I happen to live near.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing is engineered to sway 100 feet side to side in hurricane force winds.
I would say God love engineers, but, you know, I wouldn't want to attract any special attention.
Right, yeah. By the way, just to leave the roaring main for a moment, I've been considering your upcoming trip south.
Yea, verily. What wouldst thou desire?
I've decided that on this run through, it's either going to be pies and pints or gumbos. You pick.
Oh, gumbo.
Gumbos. It's Cajun / low country cooking. The only one in West Virginia, I might add.
Always gumbo.
And their gumbo is actually pretty good, and they do a mean fried oyster, and yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
The beer selection is not quite as good as it is at Pies and Pints.
By the way, when I sent you the link to the Liquor Control Board of Ontario website a while back.
Yes.
Did you do any other scouting around?
Well, I did. You knew I would.
Yeah, I know. What did you find here that intrigued you?
Oh, I went looking at bourbons. I went looking at scotches.
Scotch is expensive.
Yes, that's what kind of what. But they're giving away the rum.
They're giving away rum. They're giving damn near giving away bourbon if you work the equation back. Anyway, I thought you'd find it interesting.
Apparently, I blame it on the weather. You've got to have affordable liquor up there, and damn good beer, or else you'd never make it from November to April. Well, I mean, what was it? Our buddy Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, told us one evening that Wisconsin had the single highest per capita consumption of brandy in the United States. Because of the winters. I mean, and the thing is, it was all consumed almost exclusively between November and April. I mean, you just go to late October comes along, and you go and buy two cases and, you know, hope for the best. And if nothing else, it can be used as, you know, if you got any left, you can use it as ice melt.
From my point of view, brandy would work well in melting sidewalks.
Yeah. Or at least making sure those little orange top sticks stick up. Right. Those things remain in my consciousness. No, your stories of the Roaring Maine remind me of, you know, my father. Spent most of his time on his aircraft carrier down below the waterline, you know, in the boiler room. And he had some typhoon stories, and he had an annual that was produced by one of the air groups aboard. And I spent many happy hours as a child looking over it. And there was one photograph that just fascinated me. Because give the military its due. They taught people how to operate some cameras in the Second World War. And there was a picture taken from aboard the Essex looking in, during a typhoon over toward a destroyer. Not a destroyer escort, but a destroyer. And all you could see of the destroyer was the last 5 feet of the antenna on its mast. It was down in a, you know, it was down in a trough. Getting ready to be apparently, probably violently ejected upward.
I used to enjoy watching the, we call them the, from a carrier perspective, all those guys are referred to as the small boys. You may not have heard that term.
No, but, I only heard, as regards to destroyers, I heard tin can.
Yep. But the collection of destroyers, DEs, etc., that are attached to a carrier task force, usually referred to by the carrier guys as small boys. And it's always with admiration because we get to watch those guys bounce up and down and just look like they're just, they completely disappear behind some waves. But they're always back there doing their job. And their job is, during flight ops, is they are the first line of defense to pick up pilots who have issues landing or taking off. That's their job.
Right.
And they do a great job of it. And God, they get bounced around. Because you get anywhere near the wake of a 100,000-ton carrier moving, you got to have 30 knots of wind across the flight deck, which is about 34, 35 miles an hour. And in dead calm, the carrier will do 36 knots, which is about 40 plus miles an hour. They're kicking up a wake It's 15 to 20 feet high and 100 yards wide. And the small boys have to ride right on the edge of that wake. It's like surfing a wave almost. And they close up close enough to get into a relative comfort spot when they're doing it. But it's still an amazing thing to watch. But when you get in moderately rough seas and you still have to launch airplanes, their job is to be back there no matter what. And it's an amazing thing to watch. I always admired those guys a hell of a lot. Only ever got choppered over to one of them to help fix the computer. And it was like, sort of like being on a surfboard. It felt totally strange, and everybody around me looked totally comfortable, and I feel like I've been put inside a washing machine. So we fixed the problem real fast, and then we got off, lifted off, and back to the carrier again. But I admire the hell out of those guys that ride those small boats. It's very nautical.
And the funny thing is, even a destroyer escort is a giant compared to the wooden ships that crossed the Atlantic to bring most of our ancestors here.
Oh, absolutely. Or, to this day, the wooden minesweepers that get sent in to clean things up. In order to get to the place where they have to clean things up, wherever that may be, they have to go across the broad ocean where they run into some incredible storms, all the rest of it. And you're talking 150 to 200 foot minesweepers that weren't really made for that kind of punishment. And they bounce bob around like corks. I had one guy tell me that the deck on a minesweeper fell out from under him so fast once that he could look down and see 2 feet of air between himself and the deck.
Ugh.
And he hadn't jumped up.
Well, you and I have developed a camaraderie of books, Ron. And I wanted to recommend one to you. I know you'll enjoy the hell out of this one. When you've got time and when you've gotten done with
the sandbox.
Well, no, not well. I mean, on the way from or on the way to or on the way back, and you've gotten done with the latest Richard K. Morgan, the second one in the Takeshi Kovacs series. This one's actual history, and it's by an author named James D. Hornfisher, Hornfischer. It's several years old, and it remains one of the most compelling pieces of military history I've ever read. And it's called The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. And it is an account of the last great naval slugfest of the Second World War, including the Battle of the Surigao Straits. And suffice to say, when you read it, and it's available for Kindle and hardback, it will it'll take your breath away. How Tom Hanks has not gotten around to making a movie of this book, I don't know.
There were some incredible stories that came out of World War II, in particular, in the Pacific, in terms of battles. Do you know the guys that always impressed me, both Canadian and American, were the guys that escorted the fleets of trade ships going to England in the Second World War through the North Atlantic? You got everything. You got everything you had in the Pacific, except the Japanese didn't have subs. And you weren't going through the North Atlantic with the weather. Now, I don't know how you would define bravery, but getting on a tin can and running escort for a fleet of supply ships, and everybody knows every German U-boat north of the equator is gunning for these ships, and they've got no real sonar, they've got no real protection in terms of being able to effectively deploy mines. Your job on a destroyer escort is to throw yourself in front of the wake of any torpedo you see. And that's about as brave as you can get.
That's pretty much a suicide mission.
Yeah, other people would call it stupid. But these guys saw it as their job. Their job was to protect England and protect those innocent merchant ships and occasionally passenger vessels, because we ran, like the Queen Elizabeth passenger liner, went back and forth really quickly, carrying 4,000 troops at a time. We had to have some way to get all those troops to England so they could invade Europe. And the little guys on the tin cans, their job was to make sure they got there, come hell or high water. And I've always admired those guys, and you hardly ever see anything written about them.
Well, this book, it's a portion of the larger Battle of Leyte Gulf, and it concerns one particular task force that I think was one Jeep carrier, maybe two, and one destroyer and some destroyer escorts, and they held off a Japanese fleet about 10 times their size. And I mean, it's breathtaking. It's breathtaking to read.
The heroics back then were mind-boggling.
It is available on Kindle if you want to do that on the way to or from the sandbox.
Well, thank you. By the way, I have to point out that tonight, our conversation in particular is another example of how we always seem to be able to find something to talk about.
Well, there always is.
Other than enraged politics and things along those lines.
I think I got some of that out of my system in the first hour, Ron. I'm not done yet, but...
I don't think you'll ever be done. And I would like to point out that I've had some wonderful conversation recently, back channel, with the marvelously coherent lady.
Oh, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan?
That we all know, admire, and respect. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if it hadn't been for the opportunities that this channel has provided.
Well, so I mean, that's one of the lovely things that happens here. I don't just casually use the word community. Something has evolved here over the course of the last 10 years that is something more than, and that's why I don't refer to this program as a show. It's not like there's any tap dancing involved.
Nobody in blackface? Nope.
Yeah, thanks, no. Although from time to time, as I try to do math on the fly, I do get a little red-faced when the blood pressure goes up.
I hope I was able to help out a bit earlier.
You did. You did. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you got us started on tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, but I just wanted to hear the process involving the Gazintas.
And carry the 96, right.
But I wasn't able to do that because I had to switch my wonderfully elegant, wonderfully performing little MacBook over to a piece of crap PC-based Lenovo laptop. Took me fully 15 minutes to get past update, load Skype. Oh, update Skype.
And well, I think we are at $81.33 or something, I think.
Okay. I just want to say I missed the Gazintas. I know people who really look forward to hearing the Gazintas. My role is to facilitate that, so apparently I was successful.
Your work is done for the evening.
And she will be happy.
Oh, she already is.
She who will not be named.
Well, and she says, we're family, wonderfully dysfunctional, but family.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's a matter of having the dysfunction forced upon us.
Or recognizing dysfunction at an early age and adapting to it.
True enough. Absolutely.
Well, sir, I will look forward to some gumbo, and I will continue.
I mean, that's just the name of the restaurant. It's not. You're not limited to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is not the one on the end of the, sitting behind the little tourist gallery at the bridge, is it?
No. We did that one. We did that.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
No, this is a sit down. This is a sit down restaurant right there on the corner of Main Street in Fayetteville. They were in they were in a smaller location, but now they moved into the corner location and appear to be doing quite nicely.
Are they comfortable with someone standing up, walking around, waving their arms and gesticulating while they're making a point?
As long as you don't stiff the server, I think it's a regular joint. You can do anything you want.
Oh, cool. I should have known, though, if you're there, if you go there and you know enough about it, they must allow that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Many's the time that Agnes has looked across at me and said, honey, really? Calm down. Yeah, it's not like I've taken my shoe off and banged on the table a la Khrushchev or anything, but...
Now, my cue is just a Spocky and eyebrow.
Yeah.
Really?
The eyebrow of doom, yes.
You're doing that here now? But I married a real lady, so, and I just admire her all to hell.
Well, she apparently must be long-suffering. I mean,
36 going on 37 years. And I make a lot of jokes about that, but now she's special. I'm going to keep her, mostly because I've been through the hoops once and found out what it involves not to keep her. So, no, she's just a jewel. So, and the way you feel about Agnes, I would. Feel express exactly the same thing about my bride. Oh Lord, am I a lucky hillbilly?
Because she's not.
Yeah, well, it's her cross to bear, but she got me, and I'm going to make sure she keeps me around until I can't afford it anymore.
Ron, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You take care, sir.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Bye now. My buddy Ron calling. Not from Oregon, but in fact, from far Canada. Yes. About 8 minutes past the hour, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Both lines are open, 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line. And 304-574-8178 being the other line. We used to call it the Skype line, but that confuses people. And, oh, my goodness, look here. It's none other than the Angry Indian. Angry, how are you? Oh, Angry. Yep, we're connected. There he is. Kind of sounds like it's raining on the internet, doesn't it? Skype is trying to get the call back. We'll make this work yet. Da, 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 da.
Hello.
Yeah, there he is.
Oh, that's a serious delay.
Yeah, there's a little bit of static back there. Do I have you now, Angry? No. Okay, we'll try again. That's a serious delay, he said, and yet, oddly enough, there's no delay. We're still raising money for that thing.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
I got you. Great.
All right. What's up?
I don't know. What's happening, man?
A lot. I was in and out, but I was listening to you and Ron, and you had asked me on, you know, over Skype what I thought was going on with Black Lives Matter and Bernie Sanders.
Right, because you're up in that neck of the woods. And, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't go, but my radio producer went, and she said that she actually kind of wasn't surprised that it happened the way it happened because of how things went down the last time Sanders was approached like that. So he, you know, from what she told me, he just decided not to engage and pretty much just let them take the stage. What I want to connect to what Ron was saying, though, is when you were, you know, talking about what's been going on with Big Hole and the damage to the waterways and what have you. It's the same sort of thing. These people are being poisoned by the mines. They're being poisoned by mountaintop removal. They're being poisoned by the crapola that's sold at the Piggly Wiggly. Because there's not much else unless you grow their own food and grow their own livestock. They have to purchase what's there. And, you know, they're so afraid, and you can't blame them to have anything change. So the same people now who were, you know, complaining about the, you know, the lefties, the commies are coming in to take my jobs, they're now being laid off by these same firms, by these same capitalists, by these same Republicans for the most part, unless, you know, you're talking about Joe Manchin or whatever. You know, they don't realize how they got stuck. And what Ron said was true. You know, they have a real, and you and I have talked about this before, they have a real hard time blaming their own group, blaming themselves in terms of their own political ignorance in a lot of ways, their political naivete on what happened. And with, you know, what's happened with Black Lives Matter, you know, my argument is there's a ton of Republicans that they could be hitting with this sort of protest. They're not doing that. And when she was asked on a recent Black Politics podcast why they don't go after Hillary Clinton like that, she said, well, it's primarily because of the security. That's the main reason why we're not doing it.
Couldn't get within a mile of her.
Well, that might be true, but that still doesn't wash any, you know, any water with me, because if you're going to go after one specific candidate, when you have Hillary Clinton, you have the O'Malley, which nobody really knows anything about, right? And we're talking about the Democrats, but really, who the hell is really going to slam down this policy? I mean, if you're really going to go after anybody, go after Hillary Clinton, because she was there. You know, in the advisory role, right? You know, unofficially, you know, as first lady, when her husband was sending so many people of color to the joint. You know, for selling crack cocaine, for selling marijuana. Racial profiling came back into the federal government with this. The omnibus crime bill. You know, most people who have followed Clinton know about this. And in her age group is something that she's heard of. But I really have a problem with this because, you know, you're not going after Hillary Clinton. And like I said, you know, Bernie Sanders has a bit of a shady voting record, too, in terms of, you know, gun rights in Vermont. And he actually voted to have was part of the group that was, you know, down with having Assad Shakur extradited from Cuba, which is a police brutality case. You know, and for that police brutality case, she's the only woman on the terrorist the top 10 wanted list, right?
Yeah.
So if they're going to get on Bernie Sanders, get on him for, you know, for contradictions like that. But, you know, Hillary Clinton is really the problem here. The GOP is the bigger problem here. you know, Trump has said things about black people too. You know, he doesn't want black people counting his money. He only wants people with yarmulkes counting his money. So he doesn't like Jews.
Oh, I forgot about that one. That was just charming.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't like black people. He doesn't like Jews. He doesn't like Mexicans unless they're working for him. And then his company goes to get 1,300 fucking visas and shit, you know, to allow this to happen. His own staff in his home, you know, some of them are not legal, I understand. So he's a fucking hypocrite. And, you know, he's doing this because he's just an egomaniac. And, yeah, he's shaking things up. But now the conspiracy theories are fucking all over the goddamn place. So now he's a plant of Hillary Clinton, right? Now he and Hillary Clinton are working with each other.
Yeah.
And we're ignoring the fact. And I'm talking about a lot of people in the Black Lives Matter bit. They're ignoring the fact that the same lobbyists that the GOP is using, they're working for Hillary Clinton, too. She's taking their money, too. So, you know, if you're going to get on Sanders, again, criticize him, sure. But don't make him the central point of this entire police brutality thing. You know, that's ridiculous. Not when you have an entire field of goddamn politicians on both ends of this, who have been supporting exactly what the fuck has been going on.
Well, let's take a minute, Angry. Hang on a second. As someone who's done a little bit of activism and done a little bit on the more, I guess we'd say, well-heeled side of it, where you politely go into congressional offices, blah, 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 are they saying that they're not going after the Republicans because if a Republican wins the White House, they're just going to acknowledge that black lives don't matter to Republicans and what, sit idly by while the police just gun down pretty much whomever they please with impunity?
I don't know. You know, and that's what bugs me, is that when I've asked, you know, I'm being very general here, because somebody's going to say, well, he just, you know, slammed the entire movement. No. You know, the movement is just like anything else. You hear about the people who are more vocal. You hear about the folks who really want to be heard. And in general, you hear about the people who are a little more arrogant. You know, I mean, this is the truth of it, who insist on being heard. Now, you know, part of this bullshit, whether people want to, you know, accept this or not, same thing with Israel and what's going on in Occupy Palestine. You have to talk to the other fucking side. You have to listen to what people are fucking saying. You're not going to understand what the fuck where they're coming from if you're not trying to understand where the fuck they're coming from. Now, if you don't have to like it, but you have to fucking listen if you have any common sense. You can't beat anybody if you don't know where the fuck they're coming from. And, you know, it just gets me that when I ask a lot of these Black Lives Matter people, it's like a lot of people in the BDS movement, you know, against Israel. Okay, what is the end result? Okay, well, we want Israel to leave Palestine. Okay, what? Two-state solution? One state? Okay, what happens to these right-wing Jews then who don't have a country? What do you think is going to happen? That's going to be an entire wave of terrorism, you know, which is what, you know, Israel is based on in the first place. You have to find something.
Yeah, hello, Ergun.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, and the Haganah. They were both together on that, and the British knew about it.
Well, I mean, look at this recent story. I guess it's a positive step forward that the radical Israelis who burned a child alive,
yeah,
have actually been indefinitely detained.
Well, they had to. They really had to, because the settler situation has really, it's been bad, and it's gone in waves. Like, you remember when Baruch Goldstein, or is it Goldstein on this side of the pond, you know, went into a mosque and shot a bunch of men while they were praying. You know, the IDF had to cut him down. And now he's considered to be a saint. You know, he wasn't born in Israel or Palestine. He was born and raised right in the United States and picked up and went over there. And, you know, decided, like a lot of people, like most colonialists do, to pick and choose, you know, bits and pieces of religion, throw in a mix of, you know, whatever the fuck you want into it, and claim that God gave you this goddamn land. You know, it's the same thing that's being said here. And a lot of this has a lot to do, at least it, you know, could have, I had enough time, with the Black Lives Matter movement too. What exactly is it that you're trying to do? Are you trying to reform the police? You know, some people are saying get rid of the police altogether. And it's like, you know, wait a fucking minute. Hold on. You know, what are you really fucking saying here? It's like there's some people saying that nobody should ever be shot by the police. And it's like, wait a fucking minute. Hold up. You know, we're not having a real discussion here because people are emotional and they want to be heard and they want to be seen. And yes, I'm angry every fucking time I have to look at my goddamn Twitter account and see about a young black man being shot or a young sister being fucked over. And it happens just about every fucking day. If you actually look at the information, it's out here, it's happening. But at the same time, you know, back in the 70s, because I'm old enough to remember this, and so are you, we had some kind of an idea of what it is that we wanted. Either reform or we want our own fucking thing. But, you know, nowadays, if we're loud and we shout and if we embarrass the fuck out of Bernie Sanders, then somehow we're going to make change. And no. It doesn't work like that. It's the same thing when you're talking about your community with the workers here who are out. They got to be looking at this river and saying, what the fuck? The air. How many people are in the goddamn doctor all the time in your community in Appalachia, Bob, you know, who are sick because of what the fuck is going on, even if they don't work in the coal industry?
Sure. That's the whole point. If you're living up a holler somewhere underneath a mountaintop removal operation, you may not even be working for the company. You're just breathing what the company drops on you every day. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're a school teacher. Maybe you're a teller at a bank.
But you're
in it. You're in the soup. I mean, if you're making boiled frog soup and you happen to be a shrimp in there, it don't mean that you're any less soup.
Well, Upton Sinclair made it very clear a long time ago. A person's, you know, attitudes as far as what goes on in society are directly connected to their paycheck. And if you look at, you know, all of what, you know, Trump is talking about, you know, my wife is like, I still don't understand why he's number one. I don't understand this. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't understand this?
He speaks for Republican values.
Well, he speaks for a lot of values. I've gotten, it's been a while since we talked. A couple of Democrats I know, and they tell me that they're Democrats, right?
Yeah.
They got drunk and started telling me, well, you know, maybe Trump isn't all that bad. You know, why shouldn't there be a fence between Mexico? And I was like, well, why shouldn't there be a fence then between Canada and U.S.? Maybe that's not a bad idea. And I'm like, you're really telling me this shit. Well, I think that Hillary might come in and decide that that's the right option. Maybe he doesn't have a bad idea. There is so much fucking confusion out there, Bob.
Oh, this is going to – I mean, every presidential election – I mean, 12 was weird. 8 was weird. 2000 was just a nightmare.
Well, that was a ripoff.
It was. But it seems like we're on a continuum of weirdness, and it just keeps getting more so. Every time we think, well, that's about – but no, between now and November 2016, what, a year and 3 months?
Yeah, but the empire is collapsing. White people feel that they've lost everything because, you know, some fucking radical faggots went and elected Barack Obama, the goddamn communist Muslim gay people elected Barack Obama. So, you know, we've lost everything. Go on YouTube. There were people crying when that man was elected. And when he was reelected, even though you can look at the fucking numbers and see how many people still supported this shit, they were still crying.
No. Now they're even screaming more loudly. That classic woman in Indiana from a couple of weeks ago, Islamic, screeching her fool head off.
Well, they see
and she's she's followed within a week by last week of the woman in the IHOP, the International House of Pancakes, because the goddess of irony never sleeps, hooting "Speak English" at a woman who speaks English.
Yeah.
And then saying, because if you don't, we'll get the Russian Nazi Castros back. Back! We'll get them back!
Hey, I was at a fucking, this was like one of the last powwows I ever went to, and it was in Seattle too, and this white guy, I don't know what happened, he got angry with somebody, and thought that these people, you know, because of their height, I suppose, were Mexican, told them to get out of the United States and speak English. And he's at a fucking Native American powwow, right? So people told him, they said, you know, these guys are Duwamish or whatever. And he's like, they don't look it to me. They look like they're Mexicans. Look at their shoes. You know, I mean, we say that this is crazy.
Shoes?
But the shoes. Well, hey, Sheriff Arpaio's crowd of gang, his gang down there, that's how they stop people. They assume that if you're wearing a certain type of footwear and if you wear a certain type of hat and if you're not too tall, and you're brown, you must be one of those Mexicans. You couldn't possibly be Apache, couldn't possibly be Nez Perce, right? You know, that's not possible. You couldn't possibly be a Mexican born in East L.A., maybe, for example, right? That's not possible. You have to be one of them. And, you know, again, the empire is falling. So these are folks who are looking for enemies everywhere. And, you know, we saw McCarthy. We saw what happened with that. But McCarthy didn't have Fox News, though. And he didn't have a cowardly goddamn Democratic Party, you know, an opposing party that is afraid to say anything because they are also trying to get these white ring fucking votes.
Well, I mean, that goes back to something Carol the other day. Carol said the other day, you know, there's all the outrage over what Donald Trump said about Megyn Kelly. And yet there was absolutely none when Megyn Kelly referred to Trump calling other female human beings dogs, pigs, you know, you name it, and that Republican audience was just a sitting there a clapping and a laughing. You know, that's a feature, you know, misogyny, racism,
fascism.
These are features of the Republican Party, not flaws, and these are features of what is, because the Republican Party is, it has power that extends beyond its actual reach.
That's
true. Because the Republican Party is just a rump party of angry old white people now.
Yeah,
through the magic of things like voter suppression and gerrymandering, continue to cling to power.
Yeah.
But you can't be, I mean, the Eisenhower Republican, you know, Richie Cunningham's dad, he don't exist anymore, okay? I mean, Donald Trump says he wants to make America great again. You know me, I'm a student of language, Angry. Make America great again implies that at some point in time, America has been great. Obviously, it hasn't been great during the reign of the Kenyan Muslim usurper. And it can't have been very great during the reign of error of dim leader because Trump says that he opposed the Iraq War. Well, he can't say America was great under Bill Clinton because, well, you know, Mrs. Clinton. So that leaves you with the last time America was great was under Pappy Bush and Ronnie Reagan.
Yeah, but don't you remember when Ronald Reagan went to Philadelphia, Mississippi? What did he say? I want to make America great again. The shining city on the hill.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're at the home of the Klan.
Right?
He implied Neshoba County.
That we lost it all. Because it's what I'm talking about. It's that ego thing. If I can't get my goddamn way, if the whole fucking thing doesn't think like me, then we need to fucking destroy it. Look at radical Islam. We can get into a long discussion on how they goddamn got that way. Because it wasn't indigenous. It came in from Europe. And I can fucking prove it. But the bottom line that I'm trying to get down to is it got to the fucking point where fascism over there got so intense that, you know, many of these leaders, not just the bin Ladens. I'm talking about people like Saeed Qutb. I can't pronounce his name, but the man who founded the actual Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. They got to the point where they
even than them. Here, let me bring up one of those blast from the past names that I just can't get out of my brain. How about Manusher Gorbanifar? Remember him?
Yeah. Yeah, and we can get into his connections to a whole bunch of other people.
These things don't just happen, okay?
No, those don't happen. Who gave him his money? Who was he connected to? When his name first started coming up, you know, who was he connected to? Where does Oliver North fit into this? You know, what happened with Iran-Contra? What happened with the Contras? What happened with Riels-Montt? You know, we can talk about a lot of these things, and they'll still say, I mean, they're talking all this nonsense about Obama and Iran, you know, where, again, I'm not a supporter of Obama, but look, decent politics to decent politics. The United States cannot afford another goddamn conflict, especially in that motherfucking area of the world. Not now, all right?
Well, right, and as far as I'm concerned, and maybe I'll get some grief for this, but henceforward, whenever Charles Schumer is fonted on the TV...
Oh, fuck him.
It should say /D-Israel.
Well, that and the fact that he was part of the whole gang of fucks who came up with the Project for a New American Century. He was the only Democrat that signed on to that fucking thing.
Well, that's only because they didn't ask Joe Manchin.
Oh, yeah, probably. Well, Hillary would have been down with it, too, you know, if they had
let me back up a minute. Our conversations are a delight to me, Angry, because they refuse to follow conventions of lineality. So I want to back up to another one of those little web off ramps that we create along the way. And you were talking about people who want to just tear it all down, and you mentioned, you know, radical Islam, whatever. Well, I got a problem
because
with
it
the,
was easy.
I got it was easy. I know, but I got a problem with the little anarchists. Okay.
Oh yeah.
They're gonna show the man, you know, by busting plate glass windows and turning over mailboxes. Okay, or spray painting something. And they, you know, and I, you know, the. Are we talking? This is the so-called Black Flag Bunch. Is that? Are we talking about an offshoot of them in this business of going after Bernie? I mean, my head is beginning to spin.
No. The politics are different. The Black Bloc. The Black Bloc is how can I explain this? It's really just a term. There is no group. There is nothing like that. Anarchists are just that. They're loose. You know, it's really difficult to get 10 anarchists to agree on any goddamn
right.
thing.
And,
it's difficult
and
to get one anarchist to agree on anything.
And that's one of the things that kind of makes my head hurt, Angry. I mean, there's a guy, I know him, who professes to be an anarchist. And oddly enough, the only time he shows up on my Facebook page is when I've said something about the Confederacy or the Confederate flag.
That's his particular pet peeve.
And we can't talk about slavery being a driving issue behind the Civil War because it's the rich getting the poor to go and die. Well, sure it was, but they had to have something to rally around, and that was slavery. So I don't know. Michael in Madison said maybe the best thing in the world is to just let this thing slide. You know, what happened with Bernie in Seattle over the weekend. And maybe it is, because, you know, he went on to Portland, and there were 25,000 people inside the Mott Center and 9,000 outside. And, you know, Hillary can't claim that. 20,000 people don't show up for Hillary.
No, I was outside, and it was pretty live. I mean, I haven't seen that much fervor from the left in a long time. And there were a lot of people who were just curious, which was good.
And yet, you know what? On the one hand, I think those of us who support Bernie owe a debt of gratitude to the two women who appointed themselves Black Lives Matter, because the Black Lives Matter movement made it clear pretty quick that, no, we don't know these people. We owe them a debt of gratitude because, looky, Bernie just got a ton of PR out of this.
Yeah, but
there's no such thing as bad PR in a campaign that doesn't have millions of dollars.
Well, there is for him in a couple of different ways. And the way I'm going to explain this is, you know, the fact that the people who actually started Black Lives Matter, whoever this particular group is, because, again, this is like Occupy, and it's a lot like the Black Bloc, is leaderless. There's no one person saying up, or no three or four people saying, well, we're the council and we're directing anything.
Right, well, that's a recipe for success.
Usually, because they don't really know who to go after. That's the only reason why the Occupy people survived. And you know what I'm talking about. Because the authorities knew that there were hits on them, and the only reason they weren't carried through, from what we could see, is that they didn't know exactly who to hit. You know, because usually when you hear about, well, let's have a peace conference, let's have a peace talk, that's done on purpose. It's done to draw out the opposition so that you know who to attack. You get this, you know, get the head, the rest of the snake will let us go. And what we're seeing with this split between Black Lives, between these factions anyway, Black Lives Matter, is really just politics if you understand politics. Because I don't give a damn whether it's the Democrats, the Republicans, because we're limited by this ridiculous two-party system here. Unlike the rest of the world, is dealing with parliamentary politics, you know, the people who rise to the top are not necessarily the best people in the organization. I have become the office of political organizations simply because I showed up every goddamn time for a meeting. And if they asked for money, if I had it, I gave it to them because I showed up all the time. Not because I was necessarily the smartest person in the room, but because I had intent. Okay, and what ends up happening is, like I said, you know, the loudest
that happens people, quite a bit on our side. If you show
it
up,
it happens in politics, period. But it does happen, especially on the left, because really people get intimidated for some strange reason on the progressive end. But on the hard left, when you start to look at like Romania, Polish politics, you know, Russian politics under the Soviets, you know, the left was just as hard and was fighting a life and death struggle against capitalism and willing to cut throats too. But it's the people who are pushy. And I have to say, I looked at the video a couple of times and I listened to the interview with her on the Black podcast, political podcast. And I have to say that, you know, she's being bombastic, she's being loud, she's being out there, and all that's cool. But nobody ever really heard of her before this. She pops up with this. And like I said, there's already a lot of we don't know what to do. We don't really know what kind of decision to make, but somehow, by the grace of God, everything is going to fall together once we get this done. So we'll embarrass the fuck out of Bernie Sanders, and then what?
Yeah, but I don't think they embarrassed him, though.
No, they didn't embarrass him. This is what I'm getting to, because what it ended up doing was it embarrassed a lot of black activists who don't do that, who don't put themselves and their community in that kind of position, because when a white man speaks, he speaks for himself. When black people speak, they speak for all fucking people.
Yeah, white folks speak individually. Black people speak collectively. You're
collectively.
And there's always if the white guy likes it or white woman, there's always one handy to say, "Well, my oh my, aren't you a credit to your race?"
To your race. Well, see, that's already happening because people are saying that. Well, the Black Lives Matter people who said that this, you know, these particular two young women were out of line, well, they're the good ones. And see, that's a really bad position to be put in, because now it's saying that we've already cornered you, theoretically, in this particular thing. You've been painted into a corner. So if you act, you know, with any force, with any real, you know, gumption, well, you hate white people. And this is what the progressive left in Seattle is already doing, because the discussion is already in Portland now. Should we trust these black radicals? Yesterday, they were activists. Now, because of this, they're radicals. Because the idea is, you're not going to listen to anything.
Yeah, I don't see these two women as Huey, okay?
Well, they're not. But I mean, that's not how most people are going to take it, because they don't know how to do
it. Is it getting around up there in the neighborhood? And by that, I mean, you know, two entire gigantic states that would make, you know, about six West Virginias. But is it getting around up there that this one particular woman is some kind of bizarre, weirdo Christian nationalist?
I haven't heard that so far.
She's about one goddamn communion away from being a Christian Reconstructionist.
Oh yeah, but that's the other thing that we've talked about before. The GOP is counting on that, because they know that the majority of black folks are conservative thinking people, even though they don't politically vote that way. But they know most black families, you can't talk about homosexuality. I'm not even talking about being gay, Bob. I'm saying you can't even talk about it. You can't mention it. You can't tell your parents that you don't believe in God. That will get you cut off with a quickness. And they know this. And you got to have a job. You got to be working. You got to be in school, or you got to have a job. One of the two, you know. And for people who have fallen by the wayside, who can't do that, they can't go into higher education. They can't even finish their primary goddamn education because of the way the system is set up. They have a hard time finding unemployment. The only thing out there is the fucking military. And then they come out of the military and they're homeless. So, you know, those people
and
have
brutalized.
Kind of given up.
Don't forget brutalized.
And, oh, yeah, brutalized. But, you know, those people have kind of given up. And the thing about it is, even the black community isn't giving them a whole lot of, you know, fucking play, which is fucked up. So now we've gotten into this argument over how fucked up Bernie Sanders is. And like I said, if I had time here, I could go into.
Well, I mean, you got time, but I mean, I'm having a hard time seeing that he is. He's got a different position on firearms than I do. But then again, he's more in line with the mainstream electorate of West Virginia on firearms than I am, and I live here. Okay, yeah. I mean, I at least understand it. Let me go to something Carol just wrote to me, and get your take. She says, what's the end game by going after the most vocal socialist? Do they think they're getting something better from the GOP? Bernie doesn't care what color you are. He wants free college for all. Not the rich, not the white, ever fucking body.
Well, like I said, that's what he's saying, and I hope he sticks by it. But when I asked some of these folks, you know, well, if you're not going to trust Bernie Sanders because you really hate him because he doesn't give a fuck about black people, la-la-la-la-la-la, then what are you going to do when the election rolls
out? Where did that even come from, Angry? Is it because he comes from a mostly white state that therefore he doesn't care about black folks?
Well, like I said, it would take time, but, you know, I'll try to
do it real fast. I come from a place that has no Vietnamese in it. Does that mean I don't like Vietnamese people?
There are people who think like that. And again, you have to understand something. You're talking about a community right now that is on edge. We have our people being murdered out here. This recent thing that just went down in Ferguson, you have motherfucking white guys running, you know, the Oath Keepers, running around.
Oh, that's, yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, that's the damn Klan. And the idea the police chief in Ferguson is so powerless that all he can do is say, well, they're not helpful and they're unwelcome. You know, you're the goddamn police. You've got the guns. You've got the armored personnel carriers. You've got the snipers. You didn't have any problem a year ago having those snipers pointing their rifles at unarmed people black people in the streets. How about you swivel that damn mount around and point it at one of these lard-assed, pustle-gutted white people and say, leave?
But this is what we saw, and I know somebody's going to fucking say something about this. And no, Germany is not the only example where this has happened. I can talk about Egypt like this, too. But we got to fucking face facts. When you have paramilitary organizations, which is what the Oath Keepers are, why they're allowed to do this, I don't know. But we can assume, okay? When you have a paramilitary organization that shows up to a fucking event a year after the federal government released a report and said that the violence that came down in Ferguson was the responsibility of the police and the other federal agencies that were there, as you just said, waving guns in people's faces at a civilian fucking protest against police brutality, racist police brutality. Here you have a year later, a paramilitary organization standing and chatting and sharing coffee with uniformed fucking police officers in Ferguson, Missouri, on U.S. goddamn soil. You know, how many different ways are they going to violate posse comitatus?
All right, let's take a look at that real quick and analyze it in terms of the Second Amendment. You know, you've got a well-regulated militia being necessary to the preservation of a free state. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So are they saying they're a well-regulated militia? The very definition of a militia is that it operates under the official aegis of some political entity, okay? And a whole bunch of white guys with guns is not a political entity unless we're just going to devolve right down to Chairman Mao and political power flows from the muzzle of a gun. Because if that's where we are in 2015, Angry, I think we damned well sure ought to make sure that we start saying that. If that's the case, well, it's time for the Black Lives Matter movement to get some damn guns.
Well, see, that's a problem too, because there's a lot of folks that are talking like that, and you have a few people who have had military experience, and you know they're going to get gun licenses. And this isn't necessarily a good thing, because again, if you don't know why you're there, but you're showing up to fight, but you don't really know why the fuck you're fighting and what it is you're trying to achieve and what you want afterwards, that's a problem. Because once you end up with complete anarchy.
Well, I mean, and that's not the argument that I'm making.
No, that's not the argument that you're making. But
what I'm suggesting is that the well-regulated militia language, granted, Uncle Nino Scalia says that's just precatory language, and that the real meat of it is that everybody gets to have a gun.
Yeah.
But still,
or a rocket launcher, he claimed.
Yeah, I know. But that's what where I want to go, and I want to do this kind of carefully because I don't want to be misunderstood. If that's just precatory language, and if in fact the well-regulated militia of this era is actually the National Guard, and there doesn't seem to be any particular argument on that, then the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right. is it not?
As far as I understand.
Okay. If it's an individual right, then it is not a collective right unless you're a part of that well-regulated militia, which we know to be the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So in a place like Missouri, Stan, the reason that they're not, because see, I think, I'm guessing here, but I think if you showed up in Massachusetts or New York, like the Oath Keepers have done in Ferguson, the cops probably would not hesitate to say, go the home, okay? Because it constitutes, I mean, you could argue it's incitement to riot. You could argue that it is a threat to public safety because there's no guarantee that any of these yahoos have the first idea of how to how to deploy a weapon. I mean, one of them in Ohio, Lancaster to be exact, already proved he doesn't because he freedom protected the concrete sidewalk in front of the recruiting station.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What I suspect is in the mind of law enforcement here, even if and I'm going to assume that. I'm gonna assume a little bit of goodwill here. They don't feel like they've got the power to tell these fuckers to get off the street because they're afraid that they'll run afoul of some NRA-sponsored open carry law. But but the argument that I'm putting forward here, Angry, is that open carry is an individual right, to the extent that it's a right, and I don't think it is. Open carry is an individual right. And it does not convey the right to gather in gunned up groups of vigilantes. Okay?
No, it doesn't, Bob. And of course, you're totally fucking right. But here's what they do. They pull, again, when you can't win an argument logically, you go to the rational. We are defending the Constitution, and I have a constitutional right. That is a religion here. Whether or not people actually believe it.
No, but see, that's crap.
That's crap,
Angry, because
of course
the means of defending the Constitution is spelled out in the Constitution. If they're defending the Constitution, then they are by definition under the authority of the President of the United States, and you know none of those pasty faced, doughy, lard ass white people are gonna disperse if that one in our White House tells them to.
Once
we've been through this analysis, then do we not understand that these are, in fact, insurgents, okay? They are anti-American insurgents and must be described as such.
Of course, but now, which is, we're both on the same page with this, the only thing that I'm saying is, if they went to New York City, for example, which has a police force that, where the chief brags about having basically the fourth largest army in the fucking world, where they are complete control freaks, where people are being held past their goddamn release dates, being held for years without fucking charge, okay? Do you really think they're going to let a bunch of fucking yahoos come in there and wave their bullshit around? No. But when you look at the middle of the country, where you have the Confederate flag, and where you have the Bible, and where you have Jim Beam, and where they figure, hey, you know, the Klan, well, their only problem was they didn't do enough. They should have been more like the Black Legion. Right. When you have that type of extremism and you look at the police records themselves, you can go to the police websites themselves, because I do, and read what they actually have to say. You have Michael A. Wood Jr. on Twitter, who is blowing the lid off all of this, retired police officer, talking about what the hell is going on. It's not a matter of they can't do anything about them. It's a matter of they don't want to do anything about them. And they tell the press that we can't do anything about them.
There may be an element of that, but I can't help noting that all these places where people are walking around with all these guns, all these white folks, it just happens to be places where the NRA has worked hardest to make guns ubiquitous in daily life. And I'm not getting out my tattered purple velvet robe with the frayed applique moon and stars and the glow in the dark language that says "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" on it or anything, but if you extrapolate this outward or backward, even if you try to set yourself up maybe 150 years out and look backwards, what you can see is that the legislative efforts of the National Rifle Association have actually been the sort of legislative efforts that resemble nothing so much as the Third Reich's enabling law. Okay, this is
exactly
this is a legislative campaign to take apart constitutional government in the United States by a means allegedly constitutional.
Okay, now let's go to the brown shirts again. Oh, well, not again. Let's go to the brown shirts, because the brown shirts are the oath keepers. They put the German police, the imperial police, watch them chop up communists, anarchists, right? The seven-day Adventists, but whatever the religious group was, the Jehovah's Witnesses.
The Anabaptists.
They watched them beat them down and cut them up in the street. They watched people being lynched. And there was like almost 400 fascists that were taken to trial for violence. Only three were actually successfully prosecuted, and they had like short terms, right? The leftists, on the other hand, who were fighting the fascists, fighting the brown shirts, they went to prison, and many of them were executed. This was before the Nazis came in, because people do not understand. The Enabling Act and everything else, his election in 1933, it was all legal. But the point is, when you have uniformed police officers that are going to stand around and point guns at citizens while you have paramilitary standing right next to them, and they're not concerned about them, after John Hauser just shot up a movie theater, after Gerard and Amanda Miller did what they did, after Clive and Bundy and his sons and all their paid farmhands pulled out on federal officers, and you're going to tell me that nobody's doing anything about this? It's because they don't want to do anything about it. You have a police union chief. You have two. One in New York who says that they are at war with the black community. You have another one. I forgot what state he's in, but he's in the Midwest. And he said that he wrote from the heart that we need the citizens to help us keep the Black Lives Matter people down, because they're going to come in and they're going to take over our community and they're going to riot and stall all of this. And like I said, this is after two federal reports said that the Ferguson and Baltimore riots were caused by the police. But this is a police union head who is saying that we need the public to take the side of the police. So when I see the Oath Keepers wearing, body armor, And walking around with field-grade military hardware, and the police are standing there having coffee with them, yeah, Bob, there's a problem. You have fascism in your country, and you just don't want to admit it. And that usually happens when empires are on the fucking way down. That's the same thing that happened in Germany. When they got hit with the Versailles Treaty, it fucked them up so much, they hated the whole goddamn world. And that's what Hitler needed. And Trump is getting the same sort of fucking support. This is how we can tie this all in.
See, white everybody keeps saying, here, Trump will never be president. Trump will never be president.
Oh, shit. Yeah, well, it can happen. That motherfucker is out here speaking what the average white person, and I'm including a lot of progressives, do not have the balls to come right out and say. So they're letting Trump do this. And, Paiyush Jindal is trying to ride that fucking wave, right? He's not white, but he's trying to ride that fucking wave. Ted Cruz is not white. He's not even born in this fucking country. But he's trying to ride this fucking wave, too. And every other black goddamn Republican out there, you should be fucking ashamed of yourself.
I got a campaign slogan for you. Trump, yes. Haley, 16.
That's possible. Because the first thing that the GOP is going to do and say, hey, look, we got a Negro. Oh, she's really from India. Okay, we got a South Asian. Oh, she was actually born here?
No, that's okay. Yeah. They've used that word to describe people from India too. So
macaca, right? That was.
Well, no, I was thinking back to a dispatch from a British commander in the First World War, getting ready to take some Indian sepoys over against some Africans led by a German commander, and the communique from the British commander was, "Well, I don't think that word." We'll have much trouble killing there, that word.
Yeah.
I mean, it's historically there.
Yeah, so it's like you said, it's been there. So, again, when you have people who think that they're losing everything, and you have cops that are, out here on Facebook and Twitter talking about how racist they are, and not feeling that they should be held accountable for this shit, how many cops have lost their fucking jobs recently just because of what they're saying online? But, for example, in New York, though, you can go online. There was a West Indian Day parade, and there was a slew of racist shit from the police officers there. Nobody lost their jobs.
Oh,
you have all these cops that are doing this. Nobody's, they lose their job and then they move to another county and find work again.
Well, hell, right. That's what happened with that county clerk in, that's the city clerk in Ferguson.
Yeah, well, okay, let's go back to
she's
Ferguson.
She's got a new gig, and I'm sure she's out there emailing new Obama is a emails.
Yeah, but what did Anonymous find out? You know how Anonymous is. They go after the authorities, right? So they got into the computers of the Ferguson Police Department and found out that Frank Okona, who is the head of the Klan down there, was using their computers. Now, when the Oath Keepers were down there a year ago, when the feds found out about it, the feds got rid of them. But this is local police. There's no oversight from the outside, you dig? They're arresting reporters for doing their goddamn jobs. They're arresting, you know, peaceful, unarmed protesters for doing their jobs. While they have motherfucker who was not, as you put earlier, who was not licensed and is not working under the pleasure of the fucking president, waving guns around there like they're policing when they're not fucking police. And the police are letting them do this. And when you see that, the public has to fucking worry. At least the particular public that has to worry about these motherfuckers.
No, when you let armed vigilantes run around this country with impunity, that's called a breakdown of order. Okay.
Well, it's not a breakdown of order if the order wants it to happen.
But see, the problem is if the it still is, because even the maker of the golem, once the golem gets out of control, you know, they're on the menu too.
Until they can get the paper from under the tongue, yeah. You know, that's the battle, right? Because once you've let this out. Now you got to stop the golem. You have to open his mouth and pull the prayer out from underneath his tongue. Only one person can do that, the rabbi, the person who actually started that shit. So that means that white racism to this level, to this paramilitary level in the United States has gotten to this point. That means white people need to get off their fucking ass and start saying that this shit is wrong.
Well,
and
but you know what? I'm going to go a little bit different, angry. We're running out of time. We always seem to.
Always do.
But I'm going to say this much. It is time for the President of the United States to declare these damn militias, these Oath Keepers, these vigilantes, armed vigilantes on our streets, it's time for him to declare them persona non grata and go ahead. You know what? Federalize the National Guard in Missouri and sweep those bastards off the streets.
But hey, you just talked about Israel. They realized that the grandson of Maya Kahana, who was behind the burning of that baby, his grandfather was the number one fucking fascist in Israel. He was assassinated in the States. But Maya Kahana's grandson was leading the fucking settlers out there. This shit is all coming back full circle. Israel has realized they got to start calling them what the fuck they are, terrorists. The Obama administration has to start calling the right wing that is running around here in paramilitary fucking, you know, garb what they are, fucking terrorists, domestic fucking terrorists.
And it does not. And it does not help. It does not help that an advisor to the president just got popped last night or night before last, maybe, for squeezing off around at her cheating boyfriend.
This is. We're in so much trouble, Brother Bob. It's not funny.
No. I mean, but this hello. Like I've said before, they do not put up blinking lights, empire collapsing, everything half price. No. But this is what it damned well looks like. And I wish to God there were more people in this country who understood that. But hell, we
problem.
Don't know our own history, let alone anybody else's. So screw it. The condemned ate heartily, right?
Well, alarm bells are ringing. You know, if people are not hearing us, because they're in the night.
And you know what? I'll be honest with you. Like I said, running out of time. I got one last question for you to ponder. What if the reason the Obama administration, and God, I feel like I ought to be using my Alex Jones voice. What if the reason the Obama administration isn't federalizing, nationalizing the National Guard in Missouri and sending them to sweep the streets of these damned insurgents? What if the reason for that is because they aren't sure that the National Guard would actually follow orders instead of going over to the Oath Keepers' side? Because remember, Oath Keepers is something you sign up for while you're in the military. That's where they recruit. How many signatories to the Oath Keepers' oath are there in the Missouri National Guard?
Hey, remember the cat that shot up the Sikh temple?
Oh yeah, up in Wisconsin.
He was in psych ops for the United States Army. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we got to go, brother.
Yeah, hey, if you guys can help Brother Bob get the equipment that he needs, you've been hearing about it on the Mike Malloy Show. You know, come on, cough up some coins and help this man out. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. And it is time to get out of here. Thanks, one and all. And thanks to Mark. Thank you very kindly, Mark. Mark went ahead and moved on what Cindy did, helping take care of fundraising this evening. And Mark took care of tomorrow's fundraising and took us down to $1,800 to go in the equipment fund. And so that means tomorrow we'll actually start on Thursday's fundraising, which is just freaking awesome. And there is $181.33 to go on Thursday's fundraising. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, one and all. And thank you, all of you, for the time you spend sharing in this little program. And thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.